Thanks, Karen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Our dog expert, Samantha Rawson, is with us after 4 o'clock today. So if you have any questions, any problems with your pooch that you want Samantha to deal with, and she's very good. She's very good. Get them into us, ray@rte.ie, ray@rte.ie, and I will put them to Samantha when she comes in after 4 o'clock. John Connors is in with us today. And John, you remember he came to everybody's attention when he starred in Love Hate, and he's been working away since, and he has directed his first feature-length movie, The Black Guelph, which has been showcased as part of the Dublin International Film Festival, and he's coming into us to talk about that and other things, because the movie brings up an awful lot of issues and themes, and we'll be discussing them with John when he comes in. Now, yesterday, of course, all the talk was about pancakes, and Elaine has been on overnight to ray@rte.ie. I saw your dad's famous pancake recipe on the RTE website and decided to try it out for the day that was in it. Aha! I've been making pancakes for many a year, and I've tried lots of recipes, but this was the best by far. They were delicious. Thank you so much for sharing it, and hope you enjoyed a few yourself. It's going to be my go-to pancake Tuesday recipe from now on, says Elaine. It's up there on the RTE website. And while we're on things that happened in the last couple of days, we were speaking to Connor Pope on Monday, and I was telling him that I got a text from eFlow to say that they were updating their files and I needed to go on and update my bank details, etc. And he immediately looked at me and said, "That's a scam, Ray, that's a scam." And I said, "It's a coincidence, because I've been using the eFlow because I was over at the airport and I have to go, you know, through the M50 toll thing." And he says, "Well, they never send one to me because I don't use the tolls," because he doesn't drive that often. And you see, we were talking about coincidence, and these scammers depend on coincidence. They send out tens of thousands of texts, and then it lands on my phone. I've been using it. I think it must be kosher, and I act on it. And that's where you get caught. Anyway, I got a text from Connor when I got home at about 8 o'clock on Monday to say that he had got a text from eFlow, similar scam. And then I got another text from eFlow from an 089 number yesterday. So they're out there and they're trying hard. So please be wary. Please be wary. And then we were talking as well on Monday about the fact that you have to admire in some odd way, they're very bright and they seem to be ahead of the curve every time, these people who are coming up with these scams. And I was imagining that they'd be in a room with a whiteboard and, "Where are we going next, lads? eFlow, that's a good one." And then yesterday I see an article by Ken Foy in The Independent, "Money mule fraud gangs plant educated and qualified spies in banks and tech firms." So that's probably the reason. You know, they're getting really educated people, putting them into companies, tech companies, and they're telling them what to do, and we're being caught. So just be very vigilant out there. And again, just to reiterate what Connor has said on numerous occasions on this programme and has written it in the Irish Times as well, no company will ever ask you for your bank details in an unsolicited text or email. So don't act on that. Now, we put out a call a couple of weeks ago saying that we're out and about again. Back 3 years ago, we had this big plan to go out and visit people around the country. At least one a month, we were saying. Maybe one every 2 weeks. And we would have put together a big script and said it to you. And then, of course, the world changed and you know what happened. But we're back again. We're back again and we're heading out in the coming months. And we were looking to you to invite us to your village or community centre or whatever. And we've got loads of invitations so far to ray@rte.ie. Thanks for them. We've been invited to Clonakilty, to Martinstown, to the Burn, to Lovely Listdall in Kerry, to Ballydavid in Kerry, Knockmeal Down, Macroom in Cork, and Ballymaloe also in Cork, to name but a few. But it's not too late. We're still polishing up the roadcaster to bring the show on the move. So if you have a community and you think that the greater community should hear about your community through the airwaves. Get on to us. Tell us what you have to offer. We're looking for a bit of crack. We're looking for stories. We're looking for things of interest. And we're looking for communities that haven't had a national airing before. You know, so if you were there and you're in your committee tonight and you say, I was listening to your man on the radio today. He wants people to invite him. He's bringing the roadcaster to go on a broadcast from 3 to 4:30 of an afternoon. It could be you, as the Lotto ad says. So get them into us, ray@rte.ie. More about that anon. They've announced, they being the BBC, have announced the presenters for this year's Eurovision Song Contest. So the semi-finals will be presented by Hannah Waddingham. She's an actress, big on the West End, and she's the star of Ted Lasso. She plays the chairperson of the football club in Ted Lasso. That's Hannah Waddingham and Alicia Dixon. You know her from various shows. And Ukrainian singer Julia Sanina. And that's for the Tuesday and the Thursday night. And the commentating duties will be done by Scott Mills and Ryland Clark. And then on the Saturday night, which is the final, they don't specify how this is going to work. But I think those three are back. And then Graham Norton is going to be involved as well. So they're throwing everything at it. And Mel Giedroyc, who was part of the Mel and Sue duo, comedian, she's involved there as well for the final or the semi-final. So they're throwing everything at it. So that's happening in May, and we're asking questions in here. I think we should go. I think we should be flying the flag for Ireland, supporting wild youth. Yes.
We take our first breath, and then we exhale. We give it all we got until we fail. We get back up again. We take a look around. Oh, life can be a long road, but at least we're not alone.
I think it could bring us to the final this year, and that would be a win for us. Hands, flags, everything you have in the air. Here we go. Yes. Sounds better every time I hear it, which is always a good thing. Wild Youth representing us in this year's Eurovision Song Contest. And we are one. Now, 5 on 5 on ray@rte.ie. I will tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, a bit of Ray LaMontagne. Yes. Ah, good afternoon. Ray LaMontagne. Mary Coughlan was in with us recently and she sang a Ray LaMontagne song. That's what put him into my head. That's You Are the Best Thing. 5 on 5 5 1 or ray@rte.ie. Thank you, says Martin. I haven't used eFlow M50 toll for many months and used it on Saturday. And lo and behold, I also got a text to update my account. I wasn't sure what to do. Thanks again, says Martin. Rescammers, you have to admire them. I presume you're joking. Despise them more like it. Says Kate, of course I'm joking. You know, but there is creativity involved there. And it'd be great if they'd apply that creativity to legitimate enterprise as opposed to crime, wouldn't it? Now, invitations coming in. Come and see our beautiful Bog Road Walk, Williamstown, County Galway. Thanks, Noel. We put that in the file, the OB file. OB meaning outside broadcast, you see. I got a call today while I was paying for something on my Apple Pay. I asked them to hold on, not knowing who they were. And when I went back, I realised it was a scammer calling me. Now I'm worried they could hack into my bank details. Has anyone had that experience? Well, we'll put that out. I'd say you're safe enough. Just don't share any bank details with anybody, only reputable. And of course, the problem is that it's difficult. It's becoming increasingly difficult to spot what's reputable and what's not, what's a scam. Okay, well, I'll tell you, we're reputable here for the moment. And we're looking for two people to come on at 4 o'clock and get involved in our Who Done It quiz. And we have a prize. It's a two-night stay for two people in the Tower Hotel and Leisure Centre in Waterford City. Yeah, located in the heart of Waterford City, the Tower Hotel and Leisure Centre. It's a Neville Hotel. It's there just overlooking Reginald's Tower on the doorstep of the vibrant Viking Triangle. Waterford has loads to offer. And when you're done, you can unwind at the Tower Hotel Leisure Centre's 20-metre pool, followed by a delicious meal in the stunning setting of Hobson's Restaurant. And the winner will also receive two passes to the House of Waterford Factory Tour, which will open your eyes to the techniques, tools and highly skilled craftspeople that turn ideas and imagination into luxury crystal. TheTowerHotelWaterford.com. It's just TowerHotelWaterford.com. Here's your qualifying question today on this Wednesday afternoon. Is today traditionally known as Ash Wednesday or Soot Wednesday? It's today traditionally known as Ash Wednesday or Soot Wednesday. 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Coming up next, we're going to be speaking with John Connors about his new movie, The Black Guelph. And in some of the conversation, we'll be covering topics such as institutional abuse, trauma and suicide. So just be warned that they might come up in the next half hour or so in our chat with John. After this,
it's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 Ray at RTE.ie. The Black Guelph is the directorial feature debut of John Connors. It's going to be shown next Wednesday as part of the Dublin International Film Festival. The story follows Canto, a small time drug dealer whose long absent father, a victim of industrial school abuse, returns home looking for forgiveness and reconciliation. And John Connors joins us in the studio. How are you doing, John?
I'm very good, Ray. How are you?
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm in awe of people who can direct a feature-length movie. It's no mean feat.
Don't be in awe of me.
It's no mean feat, John.
No, it's definitely not. No. I don't know. My whole life, I've always been a person who takes a risk and takes a chance and it just goes for it, because I always kind of come back to the idea of what's the worst that can happen. And if the worst is less than death, I go for it. You know what I mean? So that's usually why I'm stupid enough to take a chance, but it paid off in this regard.
Yeah. A lot of people go, what's the worst that can happen? Oh, that'll happen. I won't do it. But yeah. You're the opposite.
Yeah.
But you did co-direct before, didn't you?
Yeah, I directed a documentary as well that actually won the Audience Award a few years ago, the last one before COVID. And then I co-directed a series with Liam McGrath, you know Liam. Mm. And I directed probably 7 or 8 short films as well. So
yeah.
I got my head around the gig before got into the big leagues.
But this was the most difficult thing you've ever done.
By a million miles, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like for many reasons. I mean, I wrote this originally with Tiernan. I wrote a short film version of this that was turned down way back in 2015 for funding, with Green Ireland. And then Tiernan Williams, who wrote it with me, me and Tiernan have a company together, Clusterfox Films. He's an integrative psychotherapist, psychologist, cognitive scientist, so the perfect man to write about trauma. We wrote it together, and then we didn't submit it officially to Screen Ireland. We just send it in as you do before you submit. And they told us to not send it in and do not submit this officially because it's going to be turned down. And he told me it was the wrong film for me to direct as my debut, which I found to be ridiculous, because I don't think anybody should tell you what your move should be as an artist. So we put it to bed and we said, forget about it. And we had 3 other ideas that Screen Ireland actually supported and gave us development money for, develop 3 other ideas. But they told us, do not send in that script. So what happened was in 2020, obviously the whole world went mad and I went mad in 2020. Like I took a mental breakdown, literally. Like, and I was involved in a controversy and people were painting me as a person that I wasn't. And I found myself in that dark place again, right? The place that eventually led me to acting, which was being on the door of suicide, essentially. And Tiernan and my friend Jimmy Smallhorn kind of plotted together to find a way to kind of stop me from killing myself. That's essentially how this was born. And it was to bring back this script, because again, what this script's about, the trauma and all that stuff, they knew it would be a therapeutic exercise in a way. So they found me. I remember they were both driving around Dublin looking for me. I think Jimmy found me, I'm sure it was at a beach or something, Portmanic Beach, and both of them got up with that idea, and I went, okay. And I was reminded of why I got into acting and what saved me, which was creativity. So I looked at it and was like, okay, this is like a life jacket. So then I just put it out there in the ether. You know, I'm looking to make this film. Someone got in touch with me and DM'd me on Twitter. And that person eventually became the investor of the film.
Right. Like a patron of the arts. Like a Medici type figure.
There you go. And like it was someone who would be familiar with the theme of it and, you know, the industrial schools and that. And saw it was a good thing and knew my heart was in the right place. So, yeah, it pulled me out of that. But at the same time, then it only began because then I realised, you know, I'd opened up kind of Pandora's box with that script. With everything it's about, I was having to look inwards myself at my own trauma and unresolved stuff that was coming back to haunt me, that caused me to press the self-destruct button. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So
it
was an exploration of all that stuff.
There's loads of things there.
Loads
to talk about it there. Okay. So let's get the plot as much as we can tell out of the way. So it's Canto, small-time drug dealer, living in a housing estate, flats in Dublin. And he has a girlfriend and a child and one on the way. And then his dad returns.
Yeah.
And his dad has been the victim of clerical sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And everything that goes with that.
Sure.
And then their lives come back together or not. And then there's other minor parts. But what came across to me, and it's a difficult film to watch.
It is, yeah.
For all the right reasons.
Yeah.
Because trauma and the, you know, the ripples, and that's a really nice word, the ripples of clerical sexual abuse are huge in Ireland.
Mm.
And to see them up there on the screen and see how they're affecting generation after generation after generation is difficult to take in.
Oh, it is, yeah. It's mad because I was only talking to a taxi man and I was telling him about the theme of the film and he was like, oh yeah, I have it in my family. And as do I, you know, family members of mine, more than one when shooting the social system. So it's something I'm very aware of and I've seen it in my family line and seen cousins of mine who haven't resolved it, how it got inherited, how that way of behaving got inherited, and it's continuing on. And, you know, it's the life script that you're kind of born into them. You have to become aware of that.
So Dan is the dad who was abused, and then Canto is his son.
Yeah.
So Dan is an addict.
Yeah.
And he wasn't there for Canto, and Canto is acting out in an adult way through crime.
Yeah, that's the result of the trauma.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's the result. So that's the whole prism to look through was, what is the result of the trauma? So I thought, and me and Tiernan, you know, to get a kick out of this as well, because almost like that is a result of the drama, the gangsterism, that's one of the things that,
yes.
But also the fact that I'm kind of synonymous with gangster characters. So, you know, I'm kind of hoping that we suck some people in thinking they're watching a gangster film, when in reality they get a kind of counterpunch and realise they're watching a film about intergenerational trauma and clerical abuse.
Yeah. And then you ask the question and it's not answered. You know, what about the next generation?
Yeah.
And how, and this is a question we've asked a lot on this show, how do you break the cycle? Because it is a cycle.
Becoming aware of it, like, you know, like most Irish people, I would say, most people in general anywhere, don't really understand the effects of trauma, what it can do to you deep down. And they don't really associate it with their destructive behaviours. They don't know that connection, that childhood trauma could potentially affect how you behave in life with people, your relationships, how it could destroy you. They don't really know that, you know. So we're not psychologically very advanced people. We're just not. It's all, this all stuff is all new. It's only new to me, Ray, you know, in the last few years myself. So you're kind of seeing all that. So they're kind of high-end concepts to deal with. But the reality is, until we become aware of it in the first place. Like, I became aware of a lot of my traumas from when I got into acting and stuff that was coming out in my behaviour and destructive stuff and talking and just, you know, reading and all that stuff. And you go, wow, that's why I'm doing that. That's why I'm acting out like that. That's why I'm leading with rage or what might be perceived as hate, you know, because it's actually from a place of pain and hurt, you know. And the reality is, you don't put your best self forward until you become aware of this stuff, you know.
There's a brilliant book by a guy called Bruce Perry. He's an American psychiatrist, and he's written a book with Oprah Winfrey. What happened to you? And that's the question.
And she went through a lot of trauma.
She went through it. Now, she isn't a huge part of it. She asks the questions from our behalf, on our behalf, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because he's the expert. But he lays out, like, and it's when you see it laid out. So, right, okay, trauma in childhood, whatever. It might be an abusive parent or alcoholism or addiction of some sort in the home and neglect. And then you go into school and you're acting out. So then you don't do well in school. So yeah. then you don't get a good job and you may end up unemployed. And then,
it's
you know,
a ricochet.
crime, you know. And when it's laid out like that...
Then you become a social stat.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Gabor Mate is similar. He's like the world leading expert in trauma and childhood trauma.
We spoke to him recently.
Did you? Yeah. Oh, no yeah. way. Jesus, yeah. he's like, I love him. He's yeah. brilliant. He talks about that and he goes right back to when he was in his mother's womb in World War II in Hungary, when, you know, when his people were being massacred and genocided outside of the womb, and how that affected him. Yeah. And he went through his whole life.
And we were talking to Lisa McGee. She wrote Derry Girls. Mm. And she was talking about the community trauma up the north.
Yeah, collective.
Collective community trauma. And similarly, there must be that with the traveller community.
There is, yeah. Oh, I'd say it is in Ireland in general as well, though. Like, if you look at, get into the colonialism, but even the effects of that, so it's only a few generations since the famine, 7 or 8 generations since the famine. And then you look at the Catholic Church and what happened and all that repression. I mean, what was it? Sean McDermott Street was the last Magdalen Laundries in 1996 or 7. It was shut. I mean, it's all just there, right? Yeah. Ray, we haven't gotten over any of it collectively as a people. And then if you look at specifically the travel situation, it's his own kind of special situation. Again, a lot of trauma and a lot of what you just talked about, stuff that happens in childhood that doesn't get resolved. You go to school, you might get some discrimination, then you harbour your own discrimination, and like you know, two negatives meet and there's no good that can come from it. And I see that big time in my own community, like huge. It's a big reason why there are these horrible stats, especially, you know, the suicide rate.
Even last week, new stats.
Yeah.
Traveller men over the age of 50 are most likely to present with self-harm in A&Es or emergency departments.
Yeah, it's very sad.
And I want to talk to you about the traveller community as well. But just a couple of things. The Black Guelph, the name Guelph, it goes back to 1300s Italy.
Yeah, so the Black Guelph were a group of people that essentially were like Pope loyalists, and they wanted to uphold the power of the Pope, and they wanted the Pope to run the economics of Italy. And anybody who went against them were either banished or massacred. Virgil, the great poet of Dante's Inferno, was banished because he went against them. And we kind of dip into Dante's Inferno a bit with this and take a bit of inspiration from Dante's
Inferno. Yeah, because Canto is a character from
and Virgil,
Canto's
Beatrice,
Inferno and Beatrice,
essentially what the, you know, the Black Guelph, what we're saying without explicitly saying is like the state of Ireland and the institutional powers that, again, look to protect the power of the institutions over the interests of its people.
It's interesting because we had Liz McManus here on Monday, as a former Labour TD, and she's written a book about her family life, her family, and her granny was a Republican, and she'd been to India and she came back and Ireland got its independence, and she immediately became very disappointed because England was replaced by the Vatican.
Yeah. Well, that was a whole other rule of power. And if you look at the history of... Look, you know, I come from a staunch Catholic family, staunch Catholic community. I have to be very careful with the words.
But that's it. But that's hugely interesting.
I've met a really anti-Catholic church film. For me, it's more anti-corruption and anti, you know, absolute power corruption. Absolutely, I believe.
Are you still a devout Catholic?
No. I wouldn't consider myself. No. I believe in God, I think. You know, I believe in something that, you know.
How can he let people do these things in his name?
Well, that's the thing. I don't... God, I think, is a terrible word, Ray. I wouldn't even believe in the all-seeing, all-watching, all-judging God. That's what I'm saying. In the biblical sense or the man-made religious sense, that doesn't make any... It's not logical to me. If there's something else, it's more a creation or something. In a deist sense, for me, it's not like someone's looking over every move we make. I think that's one of the worst things about Catholicism, and I think that's why we have so much internalised shame and hatred of ourselves, actually, in Ireland, is because of that Catholic belief of shame, and someone's watching over our shoulder. I don't think that's healthy at all. If you go back the way in pagan Ireland, we didn't have that at all, you know, and we probably made more sense with some of our laws back then.
Yeah. And, you know, happier people.
Maybe, who
we
knows?
Don't know, yeah.
When day to day, when you're doing more stuff that is of action, rather than, you know, what we do today, I think definitely you get more distracted. I mean, what's that quote? You know, just stay busy till you die. I think one of the great Irish poets said, we have so many of them.
But that's a big question raised in the Banshees of Inisherin, for example. It's just on the island. do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and it is about distraction and just biding your time until you die. You know?
Yeah, yeah, getting distracted. You have to stay busy.
Well, you have to stay busy shopping and working.
But if you're busy, like, you literally won't have time.
Yeah, but then you go, that all, you know, the Buddhists say, yeah. you have to sit with it.
Yeah.
You know because if you keep busy, you're running away.
It's true. But it's probably the easiest fix.
Yeah.
Until it comes and haunts you when you're on your deathbed, then. You're roaring.
But in the film The Black Glove, and that's, we've talked about this on the show as well, about addiction and trauma, and that people literally want to get out of their heads because their heads aren't nice places
escape.
To be.
Yeah,
it's escape. Mm. And you could argue that all of those things we mentioned, they're all escape as well. They're
Absolutely.
Just not as harmful as addiction.
There's so many different religions, right? And they're not religions.
You
can see it. You can see it in politics. You can see it in the culture wars. You can see it in the Green Revolution stuff. You know, there's a religious vacuum in Ireland and it's been replaced by many things. Different people from different backgrounds choose different things and they're all different religions. They're, you know, these strict kind of set of beliefs.
It's and a huge void.
And they'll die for them. And a lot of times they don't even know. They don't even have the full knowledge on the subject.
Yeah.
But they have something and they can fight for it, you know.
That's been human, isn't it?
I've done it. I've been foolish like that and fed into these things myself. You know, it's what you do. You know what I mean? So, I think we're living a very oddly divided time. And I think a lot of it's just down to, you know, social media, I think, is the big thing. The algorithm and all that conflict is what glues people
to
the screens.
It's polarising the world.
It is, yeah. And we're adopting, like, American politics and all that stuff. And it's kind of, like, just gone crazy, you know.
Congratulations again on the film, your directorial debut for a feature-length movie. So we would have spoken over the years about the traveller community, and you, whether you liked it or not, at one stage in this country were the spokesperson for the traveller community at one stage.
Yeah.
How long ago was that now?
Oh, Jesus, 7 years ago, maybe six, 7 years ago. Yeah,
a lot has happened to you and to the traveller community in the intervening years.
Yeah. No, it's changing all the time. Like, for me, I never chose to be a spokesperson. Right, to be honest, it was just more. Well, the love-hate thing happened whenever, and, you know, cameras getting put on you, you get asked all the certain questions, you just kind of, and you're always in kind of defence, so it was like, I had kind of no choice no matter. Now, in saying that, like, I had no problem with it, and I grew up, you know, with, you know, my grandmother, Chrissy Donoghue Ward, is one of the greatest traveller activists ever, you know, her sister, Nan Donoghue Joyce, another famous one. So I grew up prepared and knowing my history as well, you know. But yeah, the problem seems to be getting worse, and, it, you know, for me, I you get older and you learn and you see just so many different sides of things, and the message that I've been promoting within my own community is more just look after ourselves now, as in the big bad fight against the system and, you know, the discrimination and all that stuff. I've come to terms with the fact that that's never going to go. It's always going to be there. So instead, look at our own flaws that we can actually fix ourselves.
And without, because I know that's sensitive. Because, you're talking about your community. And because that sort of thing is sensitive because it's internal.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what sort of things, can you give us an idea of what sort of things?
Well, to be honest, you have to look after yourself as an individual, and you have to, like, if you look at some of the stuff that is really, like, made us look really bad collectively as a community, and again, Ray, I don't believe in collective blame, just like, you know, because I think it's the root of evil. But at the same time, you know, if you look at the rise of the feuding, that rose with social media, because that fed into the what I would call the traveller ego, right? So we became, you know, like, people, you know, started looking into us voyeuristically, and we became like this, you know, reality TV show online. And travellers are big into shame and guilt even more than the Irish in general. So nearly anything you can say about the Irish in general, you can apply the extra version to that to travellers.
Right, on steroids.
That's the way, on steroids, yeah. So the stuff of, like, say, a call-out video and certain names were called, well, then the shame from that and the ricochet effect from that, and then, you know, someone grabs a slash hook or whatever. So all that stuff, like, I still to this day wouldn't condemn bare knuckle fighting. I think it's actually a helpful self-policing mechanism when it is a bare knuckle fight. But when it spills out to a feud, it becomes something completely horrible. And we should always all be condemning that. And we have to look after our own selves as individuals and our own families and how we behave. And also our defeatist mentality we have. We have a defeat this mentality, travellers. We don't believe that we can do whatever we want to do in life. We have no self-esteem, right, which is very dangerous, and all bad things fill in that place. And I go, I just tell all the youth now, cop on to yourself.
Right.
You can do literally whatever you want to do. Nothing is going to stop you. Only you. The power you have as an individual, despite discrimination, despite where you come from, all these things are in play, but they can't stop you. It's not you're not unstoppable unless you adapt a victim mentality.
Because I'm just looking in those years. So the traveller community in Ireland got ethnic minority status in 2017.
But they didn't really.
Right, okay, well, we come back to that then. Yeah. Cindy Joyce, first traveller to get a PhD. We spoke to Cindy. We spoke to Eileen Flynn, became a senator in 2020. So it looks from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
Things are changing.
Well, the stats are all getting worse, like in terms of
suicides and
suicide representation in prison, you know.
Okay.
Academia, all that stuff is getting slightly better, I would say, especially for women. Our community is one of the few communities that the women, you know, the female stats are better, definitely better than men.
Why is that, do you think?
I think the reason why traveller women get more educated is because it's the maternal instinct to better for their kids. I think that's a big thing. And traveller women, like, you know, despite, you know, what people might think looking inwards, I think as a real super, you know, dark patriarchal community, it's really the opposite. Women control the families, men give the women that go, that's your thing. So that's why we see women go further in education, because they want their kids to do better. And that is improving, and things are improving. But again, you go back to the suicide rate being the highest in the world per capita of any people, and that's not even the rate, Ray. Every traveller knows that. Like, the rate is 11% of travellers die by suicide. I'd say it's more than it's probably 20%. That's what I think, because so many of them are going unreported because of the shame of suicide. It's the worst thing, you know what I mean? So we've a lot to improve, and that inferiority complex, that internalised shame.
It's funny you say that. Not funny at all, but it's coincidental. Because I circled this, and it's from the other day. Our research supports existing evidence which says that there's a high prevalence of alcohol and drug misuse in the traveller community. Traveller patients, this is the bit, traveller patients request that they don't involve any significant others in suicide prevention interventions. May reflect cultural stigma when experiencing emotional pain. So when they do present to the health services, but they don't want their family and their community to know.
They hide it from everybody.
Yes,
don't want to
dangerous.
Tell anybody to know. Trying to be strong. It's just so cliche, but it's so true.
But you've been there. Like, we started, it took me aback, really.
But even me, like, Ray, and I'm known as a mental health advocate, not just for travellers. I talk about I've given out about it for years, and yet still, 3 years ago, in the middle of that, I didn't tell my family anything.
Right.
I didn't tell them anything, that I was literally about to kill myself, because I didn't want to worry them. Do you know what I mean? And then luckily I had friends like Tiernan, like Jimmy Smallhorn, like our mutual friend Kim and Stuart. Like, they all got around me, and I was able to say it to them, because I felt it was less of a, you know, responsibility on them, because they're not my family.
Uh-huh.
So I was like hiding it from my mother, hiding it from my brothers, you know. And I literally just took a little holiday away to Kim's for a couple of weeks to clear my head, and to take all the extreme thoughts out of it and calm down, because you can work yourself into, you can go to hell and back in your mind.
And how are you now?
I'm good. I'm good.
And what do you do? Can you feel it coming on?
Well, the best thing, for instance, I'm off the smokes now. Like, these little things, little health choices make a difference, you know,
right.
Because smokes can help with creativity, because they really can. Nicotine is great.
Gives you a boost.
It's brilliant.
Stimulus, right.
But I mean, once then you start getting anxiety, you suck the smokes, and then you get a physical anxiety from that. Just things like that. Swimming I do, and just trying to not, you know, like, I think everybody in this country is some level of a drinker, Ray. And I'd be at times, you know, I wouldn't be someone to drink every weekend, but when I drink, I go hard.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Ain't good for your
mental extreme
health.
It absolutely isn't.
No.
So if you're dealing with stuff or worse, not dealing with stuff, in those moments when you have that bender, you know, that's when that voice comes to your head. Here I am. I'm back. Trauma's back. I'm coming to get you. You thought you were ignoring me. You're not going to ignore me now. So it's about pulling back.
And here's
all
the thing,
stuff.
And it's a tough fact, but alcohol is a huge contributory factor to suicide.
Massive. Yeah. Massive. I think there's studies on that.
There's
a majority of them are, like, actually the Limerick Suicide Prevention Watch. They basically stay on the bridges in Limerick and stop people from killing themselves. And I just saw them randomly. I was down there, Ray, and I was teaching these traveller kids acting, and I just saw the image of these people on the bridge. And honestly, I busted out crying. This was like about 6 months ago. I just busted out crying because I just saw like they just look like heroes to me.
Yeah.
You know?
We've spoken to them before. They do amazing work.
They're amazing. And I went over them and they have 100% success rate. But what they said is nearly every single person they've ever encountered was drunk.
Yeah.
Do you know? So that'll tell you.
They don't know if people had planned it and then they drank to sort of give themselves Dutch courage
Exactly.
or whether they drank
and then went to that place.
It was an impulsive thing. They don't know that. That's impossible to find out. I'm glad we had this chat. Right?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I'm really glad we had this chat. And if there's anything ever we can do to help you and the traveller community, we're always here.
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate that.
Our doors are always open.
Been a fan of you a long time, Ray. You know that since the den days. I always say to you when I see you. Me and my brother Joe was broken hearted when you left. We couldn't get over the next fella. We just couldn't get used to them. And then you start doing all this serious journalism.
Stop.
Go back to the puppets, will you?
I don't know if I should take advice from you, John Connors.
No, definitely not.
The Black Guelph, it's part of the Dublin International Film Festival and it's on next Wednesday, March 1st, in the Lighthouse Cinema. And it poses an awful lot of questions for you, but well worth a watch. John, thanks so much and congratulations.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Some news today as we gear up for St. Patrick's Day. Legendary singer Tony Christie will be the Grand Marshal for Claire Morris and their St. Patrick's Day parade in County Mayo this year. And Tony joins us on the line now. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm doing fine, mate. Thank you.
Good to talk to you again. Will you tell our listeners about your Irish connection?
Yeah, my grandfather, Martin Fitzgerald, he was from Mayo. He was from Claremorris. That's where he worked. He came over to the UK just after the First World War. A lot of people after the sort of First World War, 1918 to 1920, whatever. A lot of people left and came to England and over to America. Young men looking for work. My grandfather was one of them, and he came over to South Yorkshire, where he met my grandmother, who was also from Ireland, but not from Mayo. She was very, very close. And she was Mary Anna, name was. And my grandfather was a musician. He played the squeeze box. And Mary Ann, my grandmother, she played the fiddle. And they used to play ceilidh bands around South Yorkshire.
So it must have been a treat for you to record the album, the Irish Songbook.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, it was great. We're working at the moment. We're working on volume two of it. We're getting together and hope we'll get it finished this year, by the middle of this year.
All right. So brilliant. Tony Christie is the Grand Marshal for Claremorris in County Mayo. They must have been over the moon when you said yes, and you must have been over the moon at the invitation.
Well, I think I was a bit more over the moon than they were. I'm still absolutely over the moon about it. I can't wait to do it.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a good day.
Yeah, it's a big year. I was reading there back in January, you announced that you're suffering with dementia. How are you?
I'm fine. Well, this happened. I finished up coming out on television about it because it happened about 2 years ago when I started noticing things. All my life, I've been a very good doing crosswords.
Yeah.
Cryptic crosswords, you know. And suddenly I was having difficulty doing them and getting clues and then started forgetting people's names, the people that I knew very well and couldn't remember their names. And I tell my wife about it. She says, oh, let's go and see a specialist. And we went and they gave me tests and they said, yeah, you've got the onset of, this was 2 years ago, you've got the onset of dementia. And they put me on some tablets, which the first ones they put me on made me feel very ill. So they changed those. And they've gradually, over 2 years, got them stronger and stronger. I'm now on the very strong ones. And they have arrested it. I still do forget things, you know.
Yeah, I was looking at your back catalogue. Like, how many albums lots of albums, lots of songs. And how is the memory when it comes to singing?
Well, it's fine. You know, I mean, there's no problem with the singing. Mm. But what I have to do, and I've noticed a lot of singers that I've seen. I mean, big, famous, well, singers I've been to see, and they all do the same thing. They have an autocue or a teleprompter.
Yeah. All right.
On
yeah.
stage, which is like a little TV set, and I have my lyrics there in case I forget. And 90% of the time, I don't forget, but it's just occasionally I think, oh my God, what next? So I my son, who's my manager also, he does the lyrics for me. It gets me through it. It just takes the pressure away.
That's it, exactly. You can relax then, can't you? Because you know
I can do, yes.
it's there, yeah. I'd love to see the teleprompter with the lyrics to Amarillo. Sha la 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 la.
Listen, I don't need the lyrics to that because the crowd sing it anyway.
Will we give them a blast, Tony, just for old time's sake? Okay, here we go, yeah.
Is this the way to Amarillo? Every night I've been hugging my pillow, dreaming dreams of Amarillo. That sweet Marie who waits for me. Show me the way to Amarillo. I've been weeping like a willow, crying over Amarillo. That sweet Marie who waits for me.
Every time wedding songs are mentioned on this programme, we play that. It's just, it's guaranteed, isn't it?
Absolutely. Every DJ I've ever spoken to,
yes.
they say if they're doing gigs anywhere
yeah, yeah.
and they have a problem, then they play that song, the floor is full instantly.
Yeah, it's a cracker. It's a classic.
Absolutely.
Because it's dementia, it's a big diagnosis, isn't it, Tony?
It is. Yeah, you know, I've had so many people stop me in the streets and said, you know, thank you for what you did when you came out on television and admitted it. Mm. Because my wife's got it, or my husband's got it, or my son's got it, whatever. And they now are not afraid to say it, that they've got it. It's not like saying they've got, you know, killer diseases.
Yeah.
It happens to a lot of people.
We spoke to an amazing English woman who's written a couple of books on dementia. She's suffering from it herself. I'll get the name for you now.
Yeah.
But it'd be worth the read for you, your son, your wife, because there are things that people just associate the memory loss, but there are other things that go with it. Like I didn't know that until I read her book. There's hallucinations. Wendy Mitchell is her name.
Wendy Mitchell.
Yeah. What I wish people knew about dementia. But it's a really hopeful book. And she doesn't say suffering, she says living with. She doesn't say suffering from dementia, she says living with dementia, which is a hugely important difference, isn't it, on emphasis.
Yeah. And the good thing is that I'm very fortunate at the fact that I'm in the music business, that music is one of the things that is a cure for dementia. It stops it helps dementia. It's a big help for me.
Yeah, and a great documentary there with Glenn Campbell.
Oh, God.
It's like therapy, the music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just therapy, yeah.
Yeah. So, do you know, will you be in an open-top truck or a bus or...
I don't really know.
Yeah.
Somebody said, oh, you'll be marching a mile carrying a big... I don't know. I said, what? He said, oh no, don't worry, we'll sort it out.
And would you be able to visit your grandfather's homestead?
I'm hoping so, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be nice. You're still touring and you're planning sort of part two of the Great Irish Songbook, which is
that's
great.
That's right, yeah. I'm off in a few months. We're off in to Nashville and I'm doing two albums there.
Aha,
in a few weeks. So, you know, it's a busy year for me. And also in April, is my 80th birthday.
Yes, I didn't want to mention it. 80.
Yeah, no, I don't mind.
Born in 1943.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that right? Yeah, yeah. 80, yeah. How do you feel about that?
It's fine. I'm still, you know, still working.
Yeah, yeah.
Still, you know, I keep I think the music helps.
Yeah, I saw Smokey Robinson at the Grammys. He's well into it. He performed brilliantly. Of all your songs, we played a bit of Amarillo. What's the other one that gives you most joy? Your hits?
I think Avenues and Alleyways. A lot of people prefer that to anything.
Well, we play that out then. And listen, congratulations on being the Grand Marshal for the Clare Morris St. Patrick's Day Parade this St. Patrick's Day.
I can't wait, I tell you. Cannot wait.
Lovely talking to you, Tony. Mind yourself.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Bye, bye, bye.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Avenues and Alleyways, the great Tony Crissy coming to Clare Morris for St. Patrick's Day. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Guru Margaret Mora, thank you very much. 515511ray@rte.ie. It's time for our Who Done It quiz. Yes. Two quizzes are standing by and a prize for the winner. A two-night stay for two people in the Tower Hotel and Leisure Centre in Waterford City. It's right there in the middle of Waterford City, overlooking Reginald's Tower on the doorstep of the vibrant Viking Triangle. Loads of things to do in the city. And when you're finished to unwind, you can go to their Leisure Centre with a 20-metre pool, followed by a delicious meal in the stunning setting of Hobson's Restaurant. The Tower Hotel... Sorry, I should say that again. Tower Hotel. There's no there. TowerHotelWaterford.com. And the winner also receives two passes to the House of Waterford Factory Tour, which will open your eyes to the techniques, tools and highly skilled craftspeople that turn ideas and imagination into luxury crystal. Hello, Darren Scully.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're in Nace.
Well, not at the moment, but I'm from Nace, yeah.
Okay. Where are you at the moment?
In Dublin City Centre.
Aha. At work?
I've just finished, yeah.
What do you do?
I do safety inspections of tower cranes.
Very interesting job. I've never met
it. Full of ups and downs.
Yeah. There's some questions I want to ask you. Firstly, do you go up the cranes yourself? You have to go up the cranes?
I go up to the very top of the crane and I then walk out the jib.
Right. It'd be silly if you just stood at the bottom and looked up and said, that's fine. That would be ridiculous. The question I suppose that everybody asks you, what do you think? What's the most popular question you get asked about cranes?
There's a few. Some are you mad? Other ones are, do you have a fear of heights?
Right.
Does it get windy up there? Is it cold? And what are the views like?
Is that it? Do you not get asked, where do crane drivers go to loo? Do you not get asked that question?
I could give you an answer to that, and some of your listeners mightn't want to hear it.
Right, okay, right. Well, then don't give it to us then. but suffice it to say, they don't come down the crane and go back up. That's they have to do.
They would come down for their lunch break.
Yes, okay.
They would try their best to keep it all internally until they get back down on the ground.
Right. How did you end up doing what you do?
Oh, it's a long, long story, but it goes back many years ago when I was working for an insurance company. So I'd have to inspect the cranes for the insurance.
Ah, and then you went out on your own, and that's your area now. Yeah, I
left the Furline mousetrap and went out on my own, and it's been brilliant. And I've got some great customers, and it's a great industry, and there's plenty of building going on, and all the guys inside are fantastic, and they really are making a difference to how life is going to be.
Yeah, and you can see it in the skyline, the number of cranes.
There's about 70 in Dublin City Centre at the
70
moment.
70 cranes, right. What height?
70, yeah. The highest one I've done, it's the tallest one in Dublin City. It's just there beside Pierce Street Garda Station, and it's about 350, 360 feet.
Right. 100 metres high.
Yes. Well done. That's it. Well done. You know your metres and your feet. That's perfect.
So that's. I'm just thinking now because, and people won't know it, but say the round tower in Kildare or any round tower is about 100 feet tall.
Yeah.
So it's three of those stacked on top of each other.
It is. Yeah. It's a bit of a nosebleed, that one.
So how far can you see out then when you're at the top of that?
I can see on that one there in the city centre, right out into Dublin Bay, and then of course you can see as far as Baldonnell Airport.
Right, that'd be sort of 5 or 6 miles outside the city centre.
Great views, fantastic views. I get a lot of interest on my LinkedIn page and Instagram because people love seeing the different views. Of the city.
Yeah, because that's why the round towers were built, because they could see the enemy coming from afar. You know, but imagine if they had a 360-foot crane. Not that handier. Right, you're up against Ken Graham. There's a tower out in Clondalkin, isn't there, Ken?
There is, yes, the Round Tower.
The Round Tower. Can you go up it?
They open it up once a year, but they only allow maybe 50 or 60 people at it, you know, for the day.
Have you ever been up it?
No.
No, right.
Too high for me.
Is it? You're afraid of fear of heights?
I don't like heights.
Right. So you won't be asking Darren for a job then?
For a job, no. Darren can keep.
He's safe enough there. What do you do for a living, Ken?
I drive a taxi here in Dublin.
Right. And what are you doing at the moment? You're installing a what?
A new dash cam.
Right.
Trying to install it.
And you feel confident you can do it yourself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just hiding the wires is the problem.
Just to make it neat looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. And what's the plan for the rest of the evening when you've that done?
Just watch the football tonight and
relax. Who's playing tonight?
I honestly can't remember. It was something. I forget now. I think it's City is playing tonight.
I was just looking it up there, and I can't see anything because.
They're playing a German team.
Oh, right. Oh, there it is. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Man City. Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
Leipzig.
Leipzig. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. That's at 8 o'clock. Sorry. Yes. Sorry, I missed that. So that's what you're watching that tonight. Okay. And who's at home?
I'm just at home by myself.
Right. But you have a partner.
I have a partner. Yeah, Brenda.
Brenda, and if you won, you'd be bringing Brenda down to Waterford.
There could be an argument there, but I'd say she'd win.
Right, okay, right. Maybe I went too far there. Okay, so it's Ken up against Darren. You know the deal, lads. Three questions each. I give you the category, then I say to you, do you want a clue or not? If you go for a clue, you get a point. If you go without a clue, you get 2 points. Whoever's the most at the end is the winner. And if it's a tie on points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Okay, Darren, music is the first category. Do you want to go for a clue or not?
Oh, we'll be brave. We'll go without a clue.
Okay, who is this? My loneliness is killing me. And I must confess, I still believe. When I'm never with you, I lose my mind. Give me a sign. Hit me, baby, one more time. Who's that?
Britney Spears.
That's the correct answer. Hit me, baby, one more time. 2 points for you. Well done. And you waited till it was over to tell us, which is nice, which is great. Okay, 2 points to you. Ken.
Yes.
What do you want to do? Do you want to go for a clue or not? It's music again.
No clue.
Okay, who is this? If you wanna be with me, baby, there's a price to pay. I'm a genie in a bottle. You gotta rub me the right way. If you wanna be with me, I can make your wish come true. You gotta make a big impression. You gotta like what you do. Well,
Christina Aguilera
is the correct answer. Genie in a bottle. Good stuff. Right. Two each. Category number two, Darren, is sport. What do you think?
No clue, please, Ray.
No clue. Okay. What's the name of this sports person?
It's great. Look, it's obviously the golf course. Look at their manner. Anybody who's been here since JP took it over is, you know, knows how special it is and how amazing it is to come here. And I'm obviously the tournament's going on and I'm out playing golf, but I'm happy just to be here, kind of putting my feet up in the manor for a couple of days. It's nice after a busy week at the Irish Open last week, and yeah, I'm looking forward to the barbecue this evening and, you know, hanging out with the lads and having a good time.
Who's that?
Shane Lowry.
It is Shane Lowry, yes. Speaking at the JP McGrath's Pro-Am in Adair Manor. 2 points for you. Ken, sport?
No clue.
What's the name of this sports person?
I think you feel under pressure every game you play for Ireland. I certainly do anyway, and I know the lads. I think we try and deal with it as best we can. We try and view it as a privilege and an honour to have that pressure.
Yeah.
And if, you know, that number one in the world tag that people are talking about, or the favourite tag, you know, we've had that now for the last 6-7 games, really, since New Zealand. So, you know, we're getting used to it, and hopefully we can just keep improving over the next... Well, the next 3-4 weeks is the key.
Who is that?
Ooh, is it Johnny Sexton?
It is. Jonathan Sexton, captain of the Irish rugby team. You get 2 points for that. They're playing Italy this weekend, and then we have Scotland and England. They're looking very good at the moment, aren't they?
They're looking very good.
Yeah, James Lowe said that they haven't reached their peak yet, so that sounds ominous for anybody who's taking them on between now and the end of the Six Nations. Okay, so you're all on four there. And we get to the final category, Darren. It's history, modern history. So do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
No clue. Okay, who is this?
So there's no messing about, ultimately. She is the Queen, but she's was incredibly good and gracious to me all the time I was in office, I have to say. So, and, you know, it's incredibly difficult for the royal family because they have to, in today's world, have to be more human in a sense, but also they have to guard some of the mystique of the monarchy.
Who's that?
I'd guess Tony Blair.
Just in before the klaxon. Correct, Tony Blair. 2 points, well done. You're on six, you can't do any more. Just have to wait and see how Ken gets on. Ken, modern history.
I have to go for no
clue. You do. You don't have much of a choice. Modern history it is again. Good luck with this. If you get it right, it brings us to a tiebreak question. Get it wrong, and then Darren is today's winner. Okay, modern history. Who is this?
Enormously. I mean, my mum and dad were both Cork. They came up at the end of 20s. My mother was Bantry, so Bantry Blues fan on the football side and the Kerry side. And of course, my dad was hurling tracked in South East Cork, so enormously into hurling. So, you know, everything, we were in the parish of Marino, which was Vincent's.
Well,
the golfer.
Who's that?
McGinley.
Who?
McGinley.
No.
No.
No, that's Bertie Ahern. Bertie Ahern. Oh. Bertie Ahern, that's who that is, yeah, talking about his ancestry and their sporting connections. So, yeah, I thought you would have got that. You've been from Dublin, him being from Dublin, him back in the news because he's back in the Fianna Fáil party, but there you go. It's different when you're on air, isn't it? Sounds different. Listen, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup, which is ideal for the taxi. Good luck with hiding the wires to the dash cam and enjoy the football tonight. Good luck, Ken.
Okay.
See you. Right, bye now.
Bye.
Thanks,
Ken.
Darren, well done.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, you're off to the Tower Hotel and Leisure Centre in Waterford City, and you also have two passes to the House of Waterford Factory Tour. You can find out more about the hotel, towerhotelwaterford.com. Okay.
Ray, by the way, Ray, that Tony Blair one was a complete guess. I can't believe it was. And then when I heard Bertie Ahern, I said, oh my God, that's so easy. It just goes to show. It's the look of the draw.
You could have been the second caller. That's the way it goes. Okay, well done, Darren.
Yeah.
Thanks, mind yourself.
Ray.
See you now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Samantha Rawson, our dog expert, will be here in a moment. But first, a bit of this. CMAT. I don't really care for you. Samantha Rawson, hello.
Hi, Ray.
How are you?
I'm grand.
Good to see you. We always get loads and loads of questions for you. You being a dog expert and so many Irish people owning dogs.
Indeed.
Yes,
indeed.
It makes sense. I'm interested to know about the etiquette around dogs. Because I bring the dog out and sometimes I let it off the lead and sometimes he goes up to other dogs and sometimes dogs bark at him and he barks at them. But what is the etiquette around that?
It's really important that you respect other dog owners and dogs that are on lead if your dog is off lead. Also, as dog owners, we've got to be very respectful of non-dog people.
Right.
Because owning a dog is a bit of a privilege. And if we want to keep our dogs and keep our, you know, enjoyment of them, we've got to be mindful of other people because things can swing very quickly. And the control of dogs is getting tighter and tighter and tighter. So it's really important that we respect other people. So if we see somebody out with their dog on lead and our dog is off lead, we immediately call our dog back and put them on a lead. It's not fair for us to allow our dogs to run into the face of other dogs because that other dog could be nervous of dogs or might have just come out of surgery or might have some issues that the owner is working on and working very hard on. And then your dog runs up to them and destroys all that good work.
And the dogs on lead, are they jealous that they're on lead and my dog isn't?
The dogs on lead are under control and within the law.
Yes.
The dogs off lead and are not coming back when they're called are out of control and breach of the law.
Right. Well, tell us the law then around dogs.
So the Control of Dogs Act controls that. It basically says that your dog needs to be under sufficient control. So sufficient would suggest that you should have a good recall.
Okay.
So if you don't have a good recall, the dog shouldn't be off the lead. And if the dog needs a little bit of freedom, I would suggest you get a long line. Now, not a flexi lead. Flexi leads are dangerous. But a long line, you know, a training line or, you know, a long piece of rope or something, that you can give the dog some freedom in an open space, like a, you know, a grass area. Don't use flexi leads on urban paths and parks because they're really dangerous. But if you don't have a reliable recall, then don't allow the dog off the lead, because dogs aren't robots. They're animals and they're easily distracted and they're not 100% all the time. You know, they're not 100% reliable.
Of course, we're responsible for their poo.
Yes, we're responsible for their poo. And also, people think that under the Control of Dogs Act, your dog only needs to bite somebody in order to be in breach of that law. Your dog only needs to cause a fright to somebody. So if somebody has had a traumatic experience, you know, with a dog. Some cultures don't like dogs. So Ireland is now a multicultural society and some cultures don't like dogs, and they could then get a fright because your dog has run up to them. So if your dog causes a fright, that could be a breach of the law, because if that person complains or goes to see, a legal advisor, under the law, it's a strict liability piece of legislation, which means you have no defence. If you are found in breach of that legislation, you have absolutely no defence.
I'm curious to know, has anybody ever been found in breach of that legislation when it comes to a fright?
Well, I don't know, Ray, but it's a possibility.
Yes, it is a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. So it's just respecting other people and keeping your dog under control and knowing your dog, I suppose.
Knowing your dog and kind of remembering that it is a privilege. It's a great privilege to own a dog.
Okay, as I said, loads of questions from our... So we'll fly through these. Dear Samantha, our two-year-old golden retriever suffers from separation anxiety if we are ever away and he's in kennels. Mm. He's very familiar with them and they're very kind. He licks his paw excessively the whole time and it's very raw after a day or two. His favourite toy and blanket and own food and treats are always sent with him.
Okay, I would probably send him a little bit more frequently, maybe some short breaks, but also to give him something like a toy with food in it, some kind of interactive toy that he has to work to get the food out of, to distract him from his distress. And also, that to me is interesting. I would ask, where does the dog sleep at home? Because if a dog sleeps in a bedroom or is with the owner all the time and is then sent to kennels, it's too big separation. So you need to prepare the dog beforehand. So I would make sure that the dog is used to sleeping in the kitchen on its own well before it goes to kennels, and increase the frequency maybe.
Good advice. Ray and Samantha, our dog, a terrier, can become aggressive if he's around food. For example, if somebody is eating and he happens to be near them, if another person approaches the person with the food, he would snarl and growl at that person and has bitten the foot of a family member on more than one occasion. What can we do without always putting him in another room or outside around feeding times for humans in our home? Feeding times for humans, yeah. He's a terrier, 7 years old.
Okay, 7 years old, he's now well practiced at this behaviour. So it might take another 7 years to get him out. But I would, with the safety of people in mind, I would put the dog out. I know you don't want them to put the dog out, but you've got to be mindful of your visitors and obviously that legislation I've just spoken about. But from a training point of view, if you can distract him with maybe pairing the arrival with people and food with food for him. But in one way, that's kind of rewarding the behaviour.
Yes.
But I would try and distract him. I would throw food across the room or put food in another room completely and feed him. Because it sounds like he's a bit of a bully.
Yeah.
And that he's learned to bully in order to get what he wants.
And that would give me indigestion if I went to visit somebody and their dog was growling and gnarling while I was eating my food.
Yeah. Yeah. I think out of respect for your visitors.
Yes. You need to do something about that.
I would put him out.
Yeah. Samantha, I have a nearly two-year-old German Shepherd. He's a COVID pup. The most adorable dog, but he hates anybody other than us.
Okay.
How can I get him not to bark at visitors?
Okay. German Shepherds are a guarding breed and they are very attached to their owners and very possessive of their owners. So again, if you can ask the people to come in and ignore him completely, and I would put him kind of, you know, out of the room so he can't bully or interfere with the person. Sometimes when dogs kind of run towards the hall door and bark, they can intimidate people and they sense that very, very quickly. And that gives them the upper hand. So I never want a dog to learn that they can intimidate people. So I would have him out of the room and maybe kind of throw a ball in the garden while somebody is coming into the house. But I certainly wouldn't allow him to do it. And I would make introductions outside the house rather than inside the house, because inside a house, a dog is trapped. Dogs are much more receptive to people when they have space. So I would make introductions outside.
So what you said at the outset is that this dog is really just doing his job.
He is doing his job, yeah. He's a German
Shepherd.
And doing it well, yeah. But unfortunately, he doesn't know who the visitors are.
You have to train the nature out of him. That's often the case, isn't it? good luck with that. I have a border collie that we got from the pound. She's not too bad with my daughter, but she's extremely wary of me. She scurries back to her bed if she hears my car pulling up. We have her 8 months now. We believe she was badly mistreated by her previous owner. Any advice?
Again, outside is always better than inside with nervous dogs. But I would get down on the floor and just read. Make yourself as small as you possibly can and sit on the floor, completely and utterly ignore the dog and just read or make some phone calls or do whatever. But just make you so unthreatening that the dog has the time and the space to investigate you.
The fact that the dog doesn't mind the daughter, and would that suggest that there's some association
with men?
I don't know if that's a man or not.
We don't know.
Yeah, but some association with this person and the previous owner.
Yeah, it could be
a trigger or something.
Yeah, it could be a trigger, but it could even be just the person walking into the room and the dog feels trapped.
Okay.
Because it scurries away and wants to hide. So it's about kind of trying to be invisible almost to the dog, so the dog has the time and space to realise that you're not a threat.
Right. I have a 2-year-old Sheltie Springer Spaniel Cross. Whenever she goes out to the back garden, she barks non-stop when we close the back door. Any help would be appreciated, please. Thank you, Fiona.
Sheltie's very, very clever little dogs. That sounds to me like she's having a tantrum about the door being closed. So she doesn't like the door being closed. So if the door is open, if it's a patio door and the door is open, I would distract her with some food out in the garden. So scatter feed her outside. Have the door open and very slowly, now this might take a few days or a few weeks, very slowly, incrementally close the door. So slowly that she doesn't even notice. That the trick about changing all of dogs' behaviour is to do everything so slowly that they don't notice.
Small baby steps.
Incremental baby steps.
Okay. Good luck with that. And the temperature is dropping to below zero tonight, so good luck with that. Can you ask your pet expert about my cockapoo? He gets so excited when he goes for a walk that it's very hard to get his harness and lead on him. He's constantly barking and jumping up. It's very stressful until you get out the door and then he calms down. He gets walked regularly. Could you suggest what we could do to calm down? Did we cover this last time? Something similar?
I would imagine that he doesn't wear a collar at home. That's what I get from that, that he doesn't wear a collar, that the only time he's under control is when they put the harness and lead on. So I would leave a collar on him and a little lead on all the time. So you have a means of controlling him while you're putting the harness on. Again, a bit like the previous one, distract him with a bit of food on the floor so he's busy eating and you can put the harness on. But leave a collar and lead on him so you don't have that palaver every time you produce the harness.
Because it's too big. The change is too big.
Yeah, the change is too big. He's not used to controlling. He's so excited, he just gets frustrated.
A lot of it's common sense. Well. So I don't want to put you out of a job.
Please don't.
Just think it through, isn't it? Just think it through.
No.
Call the expert. And the expert in our show is Samantha Rawson. Samantha, thank you very much. Mind yourself. Okay, Sarah and Cormac are on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.